Welcome to The Digital Shift. I'm Jenny Weindorp, Director of Development and Engagement here at NHS Providers. This mini-series explores how senior leaders in the health sector can confidently lead their organisations in the shift from analogue to digital. We'll explore topics such as how to harness data, the importance of understanding cyber risks, and what leaders need to do differently to drive progress in the digital age. In each episode, we'll be joined by senior leaders and experts who have led impactful and lasting change in complex organisations. Our host, Chris Fleming, a partner at Public Digital and delivery partner of our Digital Boards and Digital ICS programmes, will draw out practical advice and solutions by digging into the how leaders navigated the challenges of organisation-wide change, and how you can set your teams up for success. In this episode of The Digital Shift, Chris is joined by digital transformation expert and senior director at Public Digital, Kate McLaurin. In 2020, Kate was head of delivery when the London Borough of Hackney experienced a major ransomware cyber attack. Kate was instrumental in leading the council's response, particularly around data theft. Chris digs into Kate's experience of the cross-organisation response, as well as what she learnt from the incident. You'll hear Kate's actionable advice for leaders on mitigating, preparing for, and responding to similar situations that might happen in your organisation. Enjoy the episode.
Hi, I'm Chris Fleming. I'm a partner at Public Digital and I lead our healthcare practice. My previous career was in digital delivery and transformation in the NHS, and I'm delighted to today be talking about responding to a cyber attack. It seems like there are reports of new cyber attacks on public and commercial organisations every week, and in the NHS, it's no exception. You know, we see stories in the media most weeks about these attacks taking place. And whenever we speak to NHS boards about this particular topic, there is certainly recognition around the risks. But my sense is that talking about those risks in the abstract can be quite different from what the lived experience of dealing with a cyber attack is. So what we want to do is think a bit about very practically what board leaders can and should do in the event of something like a cyber attack happening to them. And in 2020, that dreaded moment happened to the London Borough of Hackney, where Kate was working at the time. And Kate is going to tell us how she led that response and how Hackney came out of it. And hopefully it won't bring back too many painful memories. Welcome, Kate. Hello.
Hi, Chris. Really nice to be here this morning.
You know, just to give our listeners the scale of this, I remember you telling me once you were talking to the COBRA team, you know, the Cabinet Office briefing room team who activate in an emergency, saying that they were paying attention to three things at that moment: COVID, Brexit and Hackney. So you were in that triumvirate.
Yeah, that was quite the moment.
So over the next course of the podcast, we're going to hear a bit more about the Hackney story, so that by the end of the episode, hopefully you will have heard about some things that you may not have thought of when it comes to dealing with a cyber attack. And so you'll also be able to ask the questions which will help build your cyber resilience and know where to invest your time and money as leaders. We're going to start off, Kate, with some quickfire statements. And what I would like you to do is just give me one word answers. And my last guest, Lara, really struggled to stick to this rule. So hopefully you'll get one word in here. Let's give it a try. Cyber attacks are inevitable.
Yes.
You can plan for what will happen in a cyber attack.
Mostly.
Modern technology is more risky.
Depends.
Cybersecurity prevents people from working collaboratively.
No.
The attackers will always be one step ahead.
Yes.
Cyber attacks only affect the IT and data teams.
No.
Cybersecurity is everyone's responsibility.
Yes.
It's better for leaders to say nothing to colleagues rather than explain when there is uncertainty.
No.
And now, for a longer answer, please, what's the biggest misconception in your view about when a cyber attack happens?
I think the biggest misconception is probably around not understanding the emotional impact of dealing with an attack. It's obviously a really high stress situation. It often means that you can't run your services as normal. So it piles up work and stress across the whole organisation. And I think as leaders, we've got a really important role to bring people together and to set up our culture in organisations so that we are able to respond to these kinds of events when they happen. I did very well on the one-word answers, by the way.
Yeah, you did very well. Vastly outperformed our mutual friend, Lara. So, Kate, just transporting yourself back to 2020, I wondered if you could give us a little bit of context about the particular attack.
So in October 2020, Hackney suffered a ransomware attack. Very simply, a ransomware attack is an attack on your system where the attacker gains control of a certain part of your system or some data, and they ask you for a ransom in order to decrypt it or to release it back to you. So the UK's position on ransomware attacks is not to pay, because obviously the more that organisations pay the ransom, the more lucrative it becomes for the attackers to try the ransomwares. So in October 2020, all of our on-premises systems were offline. There was a wide range of impacts across the different services that Hackney were running, which affected up to 280,000 residents. And it took about 3 years to recover and about £12 million. So that's the scale.
I mean, that's a really serious incident, isn't it? And it's kind of no wonder that it had national attention. I mean, presumably the leaders of your organisation must have been on the phone to you, literally from the first second, asking things like, what's happening? When are we going to be back up? What's happened with the data? How did you manage that situation?
Yeah, I mean, there was a lot that we didn't know right at the start of the attack. I would say that our leaders absolutely were asking those questions, but they were also extremely good at helping us and supporting us to make bold and decisive decisions about where we would start. So we had a set of guiding principles very quickly about which services we would recover in what priority order, starting with vulnerable children and families and adults in Hackney, and then working our way down a list of priority services. It's important to remember, much like in the NHS, you know, an organisation such as Hackney is running and offering hundreds of services. It's an organisation like every local authority that provides services to all sorts of people in all sorts of different ways. So being able to prioritise what you're recovering when is really important right from the start. And our leaders at Hackney were particularly good at being very robust around that.
What steps did you particularly take to help manage this in the heat of the moment?
A couple of really important things. One was that we'd already built a culture of working openly and transparently with our own teams. So there was a really high levels of trust. We told them everything we could tell them, but we were open about the fact that there were things that we just couldn't tell them, because the other issue in a cyber attack is that the attackers could still be hard at work at your network, and anything that you say can be used against you by the attackers themselves. So we had to tread the line between being as open and transparent as possible, but not giving the attackers any information that they might be able to use. The organisation also made the decision to be as open and transparent as possible. The message about services being down was updated pretty quickly to say that we were suffering an attack and that we were doing our best to recover services. And then we talked very openly about what order we would recover those services in and who we, most importantly, were focusing on in terms of residents. So we didn't really talk in terms of systems, but we talked in terms of services that we were getting back up and running.
When you were giving answers to our quickfire questions, you were unequivocal that yes, cyber attacks are inevitable. But when I asked whether you can plan for what will happen in a cyber attack, you said mostly. Can you unpack that for me?
Yes. So unequivocally, cyber attacks happen all the time. So organisations are under threat day in, day out. And anyone who works in a security operations centre, anyone who works in cybersecurity will tell you that there will be near misses, things that they prevent. And it rarely gets talked about because it's just the noise of being in an internet connected world. I think you can mostly plan. And I said mostly because I think when people think about planning for a cyber attack, they think about business continuity plans. They think about doing exercises that help you understand your cyber resilience, understand who's going to do what in the moment. But I said mostly because you can't plan for what sort of attack, and you can't plan for when it happens and who is around when it happens.
You talked about exercises being one way of preparing. And I suppose if I'm in an institution, I've got a big, long list of projects to deliver, limited capacity, struggling to prioritize. Just sort of might think, well, you know, this is a lot of extra work. I've got deadlines to meet. How do you convince leaders to make the space and the budget for this kind of preparation?
That's a really good question. I think if you see it just as a cyber resilience exercise, then you're probably not getting the most value out of it. But I think if you use the cyber resilience exercise as a way in to a conversation about how people behave, what leaders are doing, what the culture is in your organization, you can use it as a way to really understand how resilient you are as an organization, full stop, and what will get in your way to a good response and what strengths you've actually already got.
The wider kind of benefits of doing these such exercises is really resonating with me. You've talked a bit about how the incident in Hackney really forced you to prioritize, and building a prioritization muscle is advantageous whether you're in the middle of an attack or not.
When the attack came, we were able to prioritize based on our users, not based on the services. And I know that sounds like a really subtle distinction, but it's really helpful. So to be able to say our first principle is that services that meet the needs of our most vulnerable people in Hackney are the ones we're going to focus on first, meant that we were able to circumvent what might have been quite a lot of arguing over whose service was most important.
Another of the quickfire responses you were slightly equivocal over was that modern technology is more risky, to which you said it depends. So again, I wondered if you could unpack that for us.
In principle, cloud technology is more secure. Running your own server estate means that you are taking on the burden of making sure that that estate is secure yourself. Cloud technology is, in theory, more secure. But any technology that is badly implemented and not well understood and not looked after properly becomes less secure over time. And so people often talk about legacy technology and legacy estates being less secure than modern technology. But I would say it's about how well you understand the estate that you have and how things are connected and what is actually happening. And that includes your supply chain.
You must come from a computer science background, do you?
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not. So my role at Hackney was as head of delivery. So I was responsible for how we got new services built and delivered, or bought and delivered. I ran a team of delivery managers. I also looked after data protection and a variety of other services. So I was really responsible for not the technology side of things, but actually the how do you make change happen side of things. I don't have a technology background at all, but I learned an awful lot in the run up to the cyber attack and then during the cyber attack itself.
Can you talk a bit about the planning you'd done in Hackney before the attack, and in hindsight, whether you'd have done anything differently in terms of your planning and preparation?
So before the attack, we had all the certifications that you would expect an organization to have, all the security, penetration testing, everything that you would expect an organization to have done. And in terms of business continuity planning, we had really good business continuity plans across the organization. Local authorities, I think, are particularly good at this because they have such a wide range of services and they're responsible for so many different things. Everything from floods to fires to public disorder, you know, local authorities think about those things all the time, and cyber is part of that, right? What will you do if your systems go down? Also, before the attack, we had done a very thorough data audit of exactly which data we were holding as part of our housekeeping and making sure that we were compliant with the Data Protection Act and compliant with our own sort of principles around good use and good stewardship of data. And that served us in good stead post-attack because it gave us a really good starting point for dealing with the data theft as well.
I think that's a really good point, sort of having a really strong foundation of data, technology, governance, team working. Those are the things that really put you on a strong platform when faced with an incident. And you said the attackers will be still working away while you're trying to resolve the situation. Did that play out in Hackney?
It didn't play out in Hackney, but it's something that organisations and leaders need to be aware of, that you may find one attack or one breach, but that doesn't mean that there aren't others happening or that the attackers aren't still in a network. So there is some very deep technical expertise that you need to actually find out what is going on. But there is also plenty of support around for organisations. So there is an NHS cyber team who are extremely good. There is the NCSC who will support you. So there's lots and lots of people with deep expertise, unlike me, in cyber security, who you can call on to come and help you with that part of it.
In the quickfire answers, Kate, you said that when I challenged that cybersecurity prevents people from working collaboratively, you said no to that. Tell us more.
I said no because I believe it's perfectly possible to have a secure, well-guarded organisation that allows people to work collaboratively. And I also think that badly done cybersecurity that prevents people from working collaboratively actually opens you up to more risk. So if you lock down systems to the degree that people can't actually work with each other, they will find a way to make the work happen that they want to do. So it is about thinking about the user needs as well as the cybersecurity needs. And if you don't allow people to share data easily, but with the right controls in place, then they will simply email the data to each other, or they will screenshot it and put it in a WhatsApp message.
I would argue that this is why we are seeing most hospitals being run on WhatsApp these days.
You know, people will find a way to do what they need to do. At Hackney, we'd invested a lot of time and effort in data protection training and in helping people to understand what their responsibilities were so that they could collaborate and get the job done, but in a safe way.
So, Kate, what do you think a really simple thing an organisation could do with respect to the technology in their estate?
So one of the things that I see working across different sectors, including the NHS, is that something as simple as multi-factor authentication doesn't get put in place for various reasons.
And what is multi-factor authentication, just in case anyone's not familiar with that phrase?
Multi-factor authentication is simply a way of making sure that you are who you say you are. So if you're buying something online, your credit card company will quite often send you a number via text message to authenticate you before you go ahead and pay, or your bank might do something. I find it staggering that we do it in our daily lives, but then when an organisation tries to do it, we actually resist it. And leaders often resist it, as well as users. But actually, it's one of the most simple things you can do to keep yourselves secure.
So in the midst of many cyber attacks, you know, while you're trying to restore your systems and services, the attackers are already going to be either still at it or one step ahead of you. What thoughts do you have on that?
So the attackers, I think, will always be one step ahead. They're also extremely organised. I find it astounding and also very sad that there is actually a marketplace for cyber attacks. They are extremely organised and they're very well connected. And we need to be just as well organised and well connected. But quite often when organisations have an attack or even a near miss, the instinct is to go quiet about that and to not talk about it. At Hackney, we made the decision really early on that we would share as much as we could, as quickly as we could, with our peers and across the sector, because we knew that other councils were just as much at risk as us.
Kate, you mentioned in the context of the Hackney cyber attack that there was the data theft. How did you manage that situation?
Yeah, so I was particularly responsible for leading our response around the data theft. So we knew that the attackers had stolen data from us. We didn't know precisely which data or how much. It's impossible to tell. And we also knew that it was very likely that the attackers would publish that data later on the dark web, either for money or just because they could. And in fact, that is what happened. So the attack happened in October and they published the data that they stole from us in January. So between those two dates, we had a team working very hard, a set of data analysts led by me and a team of other people from Hackney, thinking about what we would do in that response. We're also working very closely with the Met Police because they have a responsibility for any threat to life in the borough. And as you can imagine, local authorities carry all sorts of different types of data, from social care data to data related to gangs to data related to public disorder. So all sorts of bits of data that, if stolen and then if published, could pose a threat to life to people. So we spent quite a large part of our response was in preparing for that eventuality.
If you've not experienced a cyber attack before, and we've spoken about their kind of inevitability, how can leaders balance the sort of approach to risk on this and not get completely drowned in fear of responding to it?
I think that's a really good question. I'm not going to lie, it wasn't fun. But I think it's important to remember that it's like any major incident. The basics in your organisation that you are putting in place to run an organisation well and to have an organisation that has a good culture, where people can collaborate, where they work as a team to solve problems, where they understand each other's strengths, and where leaders are able to make good decisions quickly and safely, will stand you in good stead whatever is happening in your organisation, whether that's a cyber attack or something like a fire or some major incident. You know, they are part of life.
This really does put it squarely as a board issue, doesn't it? Because a CIO on their own is not going to have the levers to be able to implement data hygiene across the organisation, put in place good governance.
Yes, I agree. It's really important, I think, to remember that it is everybody's responsibility to handle data well. It's everybody's responsibility to think about security of systems and processes and services. A cyber attack doesn't only affect the IT and data teams. You know, they are your experts. You've got them in the organisation. But actually, leaders are responsible for delivering services, and services are underpinned by digital and data. It's a matter of making sure that everyone at board level and in the senior leadership team knows what questions to ask in order to assure themselves, but more importantly, knows what questions to ask to support the teams who are actually doing the work.
So you're an NHS board leader. What questions would you be asking?
Okay, so the first question, I think, is, does every member of your board and your senior leadership team understand what their role is in keeping the organisation safe? So what sort of conversations do you have about the possibility of a cyber attack and about your cyber resilience? How will you, at the top of the organisation, find out what your blind spots are as an organisation? So not just your organisation's vulnerabilities, because you're working across organisation to provide good patient care. And as a leader, do you know how your decisions and your actions around modernising your IT systems are actually either helping or blocking that modernisation? Do you understand what the implications are of the decisions that you're making? Because that's about thinking about risk and making pragmatic decisions.
Great. That's great.
I think my second question would be around investing time in understanding your supply chain. Like, do you know what your whole ecosystem looks like and where your suppliers are hosting their services? How might you use procurement as a lever for increasing your cyber resilience? What are you buying and what are you asking from your suppliers as you buy it? Then I think there's an area that we've talked about a lot, which is about working openly across your system and sharing stories and sharing assets and skills and expertise. So it's thinking about how can you enable your organization to be open and collaborative around cybersecurity. So if you are role modeling being open and collaborative, then the organization will follow. And the final one for me is around building trusted relationships in your sector, in your system, across your organization. Because those trusted relationships are what are going to help you if there is an incident, because they will support you.
What does good practice look like in terms of the way that the board talks about cybersecurity?
The more informed and confident your board members feel about cyber, the more they can ask the right questions when you're discussing investment in a new service or you're discussing prioritisation. Just having cybersecurity in the back of your mind and thinking about what the risk trade-offs are.
We're going to jump back to the quickfire statements. This time you have a full sentence to respond, not just one word.
Okay.
Cyber attacks are inevitable.
Yes. And they're inevitable because they are happening all the time to every organisation.
You can plan for what will happen in a cyber attack.
So I said mostly because you can't lock down your organisational response, but what you can do is put in place all the right culture and ways of working that will help you respond well.
modern technology is more risky.
On balance, modern technology is less risky and has more security built in. But if you put in modern technology badly, then you will also be adding more security risks.
Cybersecurity prevents people from working collaboratively.
Badly done cybersecurity prevents people from working collaboratively.
The attackers will always be one step ahead.
Attackers generally are one step ahead because they are extremely well organised and there is a marketplace for buying and selling ransomware and other types of attacks.
Cyber attacks only affect the IT and data teams.
Absolutely not. So the IT and the data teams are really valuable and very necessary, and they're part of your response. But cyber attacks affect the whole organisation.
Cybersecurity is everyone's responsibility.
Absolutely. Because we are all responsible for leading and running and operating services to users. And all of those services are underpinned by digital technology and data. So it is everyone's responsibility to understand how to protect those services.
Following a cyber attack, it's better for leaders to say nothing to colleagues rather than explain there's uncertainty.
I would say that it is always better to say as much as you possibly can, as openly as you possibly can, and be open about what you can't say. People will trust you much more if you are open and honest about what you can and can't tell them.
Well, thank you, Kate, for all of those extremely practical pieces of advice for board leaders. Obviously, we hope that those of you who are leading trust that this doesn't happen to you, but it's best to assume it will. So have a think about how you're preparing your organization for this eventuality. Lots of resources in the show notes. Thank you very much, Kate, for joining us today.
Thanks, Chris. It was a pleasure.
That's it for this episode of The Digital Shift. You can find relevant and related content in the show notes if you'd like to delve deeper into some of the things mentioned in this episode. And if you'd like to find out more about how our digital support offers can help you in your role, head to NHS Providers' website. Thanks for listening.